You are listening to TRC Unleashed.
Mizzou territory, the 47. Good snap, low. This is returnable. Ace backs up into his own territory. Take the 46. One cut, another. Straight up the middle, runs into his own man. Avoids him. Inside the 40. Ace breaks a tackle. Another. Got a blocker. Inside the 20. Ace running inside the 10. And back out of bounds. Oh, my. Ace lights it up.
Can Ace you believe Sanders. That? That's the ESPN highlight.
Oh,
man.
48-yard return on a 44-yard punt. I think even J.D. Clowney couldn't take it down there.
All right, those were the silky smooth tones of Todd Ellis calling Ace Sanders' spectacular punt return on Saturday against Missouri. Welcome to TRC Unleashed, episode number 30. I am your host, Buck, and TRC Unleashed is a production of the Rubber Chickens blog, which can be found at therubberchickensblog.com. I am joined by T-Bone and the G-Man, both residing in the great state of South Carolina. So we're just a few days from a convincing 31-10 victory over Missouri. And I'm telling you, if it wasn't for a couple of turnovers in the red zone and some curious play calling by the HBC at the goal line, we could have been talking about hanging half a hundred on the Tigers and maybe one of the most dominating performance ever for us against a quality SEC opponent. But nevertheless, we will take a 3-touchdown conference win and feel pretty darn good about it. So the Gamecocks have now risen to number 6 in the polls, which is still only good for 4th best in our own conference at the moment. Go figure. But we've got Kentucky coming up on Saturday, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes. Before we do, let's talk about a little bit about Saturday's win. And I wrote, and I think maybe T-Bone made fun of me a little bit for getting a little too excited. I wrote on the blog Sunday morning in snap judgments that this team just has developed a look about it, and it had it Saturday. They're just don't appear at this point to be the glaring weaknesses that South Carolina teams typically have. You know, going in, we thought Missouri was a pretty scary team. You had James Franklin. There's a lot of talk about him in the preseason. He hasn't quite lived up to billing so far. They got a few weapons on offense. They got the number one player in the country, high school player, as a true freshman, Doriel Green Beckham. Their defense has actually been what everybody was talking about so far this season, and they played UGA toe-to-toe for 3 quarters and even into the 4th quarter a little bit, and we just dismantled that team. I think I texted to one of you guys at one point when we were just moving the ball up and down the field, just – pinch me. How is this happening? G-Man, how is this happening? Am I overboard?
No, I don't think you're overboard. I think it's just one of those games where everything clicked. I mean, we certainly had plenty of games where things didn't click and we struggled. I mean, many times last year, but I think it's one of those games where everything just sort of clicked for us. You know, obviously the passing game, the game plan going in was to hit the stuff underneath. I've heard it stated that it was clear that Missouri came out in a 2-deep zone and the intermediate to short passes were available. And Shaw was on target. Nobody dropped the ball. Marcus was in the game plan as a receiving threat as much as he was in the game plan as a running threat. You know, it's just one of those games where it all worked. I mean, and I'm not sure how good Missouri is. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from what we did, but, you know, Missouri, you know, I'm not sure about that. I mean, they played Georgia at home. They were all hyped up at home for that ball game. They roll in here for their first SEC road game, and I think that has to be taken into consideration. I think they're a little shell-shocked by the atmosphere, maybe a little bit awestruck by the atmosphere, and that place was rocking on Saturday. I mean, that's one of the best atmospheres I've ever witnessed at the beginning of a game. I think our guys fed off that. You know, the defense was just was hyped up as well. You know, I don't really know. I mean, it's just one of those games where it all came together.
Yeah, it's funny. That's one of those things. The Missouri guys and T.J. Moe in particular at SEC Media Days back in the summer was talking about, you know, we play big time football. You know, we're not going to be intimidated. People act like we're coming into this league and we don't know what big time college football is about. But you know, most of the, you know, the articles you read from Missouri, from Kansas City, from, you know, in that area were kind of like, wow, that's what SEC football is all about right there. And it was just a good day to consider. We botched a couple of drives with fumbles, and then that really, you know, really strange sequence of plays down on the goal line that at the moment I thought, well, that's it. We've fumbled away one chance, and now horrible play calling has cost us another. That's how you lose a ball game right there. But, you know, Connor Shaw, 20 straight completions, 249 yards, 2 touchdowns, and he'll actually have a chance to keep that streak going and possibly break a national record on Saturday if he can hit his first 5 passes. Ace Sanders with 1 touchdown catch, and we finally have a punt returner, guys. Who was the last punt returner we had? Who was the guy who returned the punt against Florida?
Chavez Donnings.
Chavez Donnings, that's right. Anytime I think about us returning a punt for a touchdown, I think of Chavez Donnings against Florida. T-Bone, how'd you feel about the performance?
Well, you know, y'all sort of covered the high points there. There were moments in that game that felt really good. There were moments that were very frustrating. And if you go back and think about how you felt late in the first quarter, where it just felt like we are way better than these guys. We're out hitting them, we're out thinking them, and we're just not getting the points out of it. And we all started thinking the classic kind of Gamecock way to think, which is, this is going to come back and cost us at the end. Well, it didn't come back and cost us in the end because, you know, I think Missouri's issue is they didn't have anybody to sub. So we keep beating on the door and rotating guys in and out because we're able to do that now, and they couldn't do it. But there was one particular series, and this won't shock anybody, but there was one particular series that was, I found, particularly heartening, and that is Missouri finally comes down and gets a field goal, and you're thinking, okay, the game's going to kind of settle into an uncomfortable second half. It's 14-3, you know, might be a long day, and they kick off to us, and Bruce brings that ball back to the 50, and so you're excited about that, but you look at the clock, and you think, oh, man, we burn clock like nobody's business. We never handle this situation right. And we proceeded to just go boom, 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 and score the touchdown to go in at the – and that was really the game right there.
Right.
You could tell from the way they went into the locker room, 21-3, you know, it was on at that point. But I love the way we went boom, boom, boom right down the field, hit the big pass there for the touchdown. It was not in character for us in years gone by, which I guess kind of fits with what you started off this discussion with saying is – this feels like a little bit of a different team.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about this. What are we now? 4-0? 4-0 start and number 6 national ranking. And the last time we were ranked that high was 2007. And we subsequently lost to Vandy at home. And this is not the 2007 team. I don't think anybody ever felt like that 2007 team deserved to be number 6 in the country. We were really fool's gold. But this, you know, feels like a really solid team that we got. The defense, you know, J.D. Clowney, as Todd Ellis calls him, is just becoming a superstar. Just like everybody predicted, he just devours people. I mean, he with his spin moves, speed, power, and he's got such a good supporting cast on the defensive line. And man, Chaz Sutton has come to play this year. And I know he got a lot of praise from Spurrier this weekend too. You know, we were so worried about the secondary, DJ Swearinger being out, and I, you know, just wasn't a problem. I can't even tell you what happened in the secondary on Saturday. I didn't even notice anybody doing anything right or wrong. And I'm going to come back to my linebackers. I've talked about the linebackers a couple of times. Those guys are playing some solid football. Quinn Smith led the team, I think, with 10 tackles. Reginald Bowen, Shaq Wilson, DeMario Jeffrey, those guys are just playing good, solid football. So I think offense, defense, and, you know, all of a sudden the special teams is getting a lot of pub. And we had a really good special teams day on Saturday, and Joe Robinson's name has come up a good bit. But I just got to remind everybody, we had our special teams have been pretty horrible the first three games. Am I wrong about that? I mean, it was a good day Saturday, but I don't think it's, you know, I'm trying to figure out what the exception and what the rule is here.
I don't know. You know, Demir Byrd didn't have to run anybody down from behind Saturday, so that counts as a good day, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, anytime you get a couple of kick returns, it certainly makes your special teams look really good. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
The punting was a little better, and we hit a field goal. So I guess, you know, those are all positives.
Yeah.
The other thing is your set, you know, film is now being accumulated on us. It's no mistake that the game plan for Missouri was, look, we got to take away the deep ball. They don't know our history. We're all sitting there knowing, you know, 30 years of, well, that ain't going to work. Right. They know three games of what the film shows. And what the film shows is that we're airing it out this year.
Right.
Same kind of thing with, you know, with the other facets of the game. They've got to sit there and look, and now they're going to have to say, well, we're going to have to game plan about punting to number one because that's not going to work.
Right.
This is all good, and it builds on itself. The other thing, one more point before we move on from kind of the defense, the secondary, isn't it amazing how you can flip the switch and we go from feeling like we just don't have any players in the secondary to now this coming week, Auguste's back, Swearinger's back, we feel good about Gurley. You know, suddenly it feels like you've got, you know, you've got some riches back there. I'm excited about that.
Well, until Auguste plays a down
and doesn't rip his groin open, we'll temper our expectations with number three out there. Yeah, you know, you brought up a point. Spurrier mentioned in his post game that Missouri just played a cover two or a two deep just pretty much the whole game, and they never had to make any real adjustments offensively. And you know, Shaw had 20 completions on the day. I think I read somewhere where 13 of his 20 were to Lattimore and Cunningham. So he was definitely taking the underneath stuff, but hit a couple of decent, you know, medium and long balls too there. You don't get 249 yards passing by hitting your check down every time. So let's talk about the Rubber Chicken Awards. Who gets to go first this week? G-Man. T-Bone, go first with the Rubber Chicken Award.
I mean, if I get to go first, I think there's really two big choices is out there right now, so I'm not going to take either one of them. I'm going to my Rubber Chicken Award goes to DJ Swearinger just because he should have been making plays in that game, and I'm anxious to see him back next week. So free date, free DJ. I'm going with DJ.
All right, G-Man, who you got?
That was a very curious choice.
The guy that didn't even put pads on.
That's the easiest Rubber Chicken Award anybody's ever won. But, I'm gonna go with the obvious choice and go with Connor Shaw. You can't avoid giving a rubber chicken to Connor after going 20 out of 21. And you know, let's also talk about the play that should not have been called back.
Right,
the 80-yard touchdown run, which was a thing of beauty, by the way. I mean, the guy's got a motor. I mean, he outruns the secondary to the end zone. I mean, it was a beautiful play. He also ran the ball effectively. He ran the ball more effectively than I thought he was going to. I mean, he was not running it all over the place, but he made his yards when he needed to, picked up a couple first downs when he needed to, and got down and protected himself. You know, Connor is a leader. He's gutsy. You know, those guys obviously admire and follow him, I'll tell you what, he just had one heck of a ball game. So, Connor Shaw.
Did Spurrier ever say anything else about that penalty? Because I know right after the game he said that his staff didn't believe that cutting a guy in the box like that was a penalty. Did he ever elaborate any more on that?
That's what he said, and that they thought it was a legal block because of where it occurred. And
right.
he said, we didn't know that was a penalty, but that's all I ever heard about it.
Yeah.
But I've heard other people say that it was a bad call. So,
yeah. Well, I'm going to give my rubber chicken to Ace Sanders this week. The guy has really turned it up and become a leader on offense and special teams. And he's a guy, man, he's just fun to watch when he gets the ball in his hands. And I'm still just overwhelmed with joy that we have a guy back there that can break a punt return at any time. So way to go, Ace. Congratulations, Ace, Connor, and for some reason, DJ. So we got Kentucky coming up, and I read today that it's the largest spread. I didn't see what the point spread was, but it's the largest against an SEC team that we've had since we've been in the league. So I'm guessing it's somewhere in the low to mid 20s. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
I think it's 21.
21. Not
that I keep up with that sort of thing.
Right. Got that direct line 21. to the sports book at Mandalay Bay. So I don't even really know what to say about Kentucky. They're just bad. They're bad, and we're good, and hopefully everything will turn out the way we want it to, and it'll be just a good tune-up for the showdown next Saturday. But, you know, stranger things have happened. But today word came down that Mikey Benton, I think is his name, will be suiting up for Kentucky on Saturday, despite his helmet-to-helmet shot on Jordan Reed against Florida on Saturday. And I guess you guys have probably seen that hit. Actually, T-Bone, you posted something on the blog about that hit. What is the SEC office looking at?
Apparently, from everything that I can glean, we've had four instances that have really come to the public attention. Of those four instances, two of them, the person actually had their helmet knocked clean off their head. Those were the two that did not merit any suspensions. So apparently the rule that we can glean is if you're going to hit the guy, you better clean his clock and decapitate him or else you're going to be suspended the following week.
Right, right. You better be able to get a full view of his face when the play is over. Yeah, that's very strange. They need to get that tightened up because I watched that and they said something like, well, he hit the shoulder first. And I'm like, when you look at it, you slow the play down. I mean, the crown of his helmet is just driving into that crease between Jordan Reed's shoulder pad and his helmet where his face mask is. And I'm like, you just can't distinguish between those hits. It's crazy. So poor Joker Phillips, good guy. Not long for Lexington, Kentucky, so hopefully we can help his exit out the door.
Let me step in and kind of rain on the parade a little bit here.
About the Kentucky game?
It's going to be cold up there
on
Saturday night. It's going to be a high, I think, of 60. That's going to be the temperature at kickoff, and it's going to drop. There's a good chance of rain. That stadium is going to be empty because all those guys are already over at the basketball arena.
They're camped
hanging out.
Waiting for Midnight Madness.
Waiting for Midnight Madness. Maybe it'll just happen spontaneously that night, you know. So there's going to be no energy in that stadium. We're going to come up there not really expecting to have to do much other than roll our helmets out, you know. So it wouldn't shock me if our guys have a hard time getting up emotionally once they're in that stadium. I hope Kentucky's as bad as we think they are, but that is going to be a big energy suck up there. And so I'm, in a way, dreading it. Hopefully we'll be able to keep the enthusiasm up, execute our plays, and go from there. They've got, you know, a few talented guys on that team. I think particularly, you know, on the defense, they've got a couple of players. But, you know, I just hope the three of us, we've sat in a bar or two late at night, sipping unsweetened iced tea and watched some pretty miserable South Carolina Kentucky games. So I'm hoping it won't be that way.
Yeah. Speaking of sucking the life out of somebody, what are you talking low? Are people asleep at your house or something? Why are you talking so low? There's no life in your voice.
Low?
You're depressing. You're bringing me down. I think I heard G-Man tying a knot over at his house, getting the rope ready.
Well, I share some of those sentiments in that I'm not used to being the fan of a team with a 21-point spread in their favor on the road. I mean, it just seems right. So unnatural. And yeah. We know what happened at Kentucky 2 years ago. Granted, they had a great player in Randall Cobb and a very serviceable quarterback in Hartline at that time. They could move the football. I'm not so sure they can do that this time around. And I think our defense is better, a lot better. But our guys better be prepared to play. This is an SEC game on the road. We learned last year that playing some bad to mediocre teams on the road is not easy. This game scares me. It's a classic trap game, and I think we're going to win, but I don't see us covering 21 points.
Well, I'll tell you guys, Randall Cobb is not walking through that door.
Good.
Neither is Tim Couch. So I should be doing my opposite thing, by the way.
I'm screwing up on the opposite thing. That worked last week.
Kentucky 37-17. All right, let's take a look around the rest of the SEC from Saturday, and you just get the feeling that our schedule doesn't look nearly as daunting today as it did on August 31st. What looked like a pretty good Tennessee team at the beginning of the year, they've been blown out by Florida. They struggled with Akron on Saturday. They go to UGA this weekend, and I think we'll learn a little more about both of those teams in Athens. LSU just squeaked by Auburn. That was probably the shocker of the weekend, along with Arkansas losing to Rutgers. But I couldn't believe Auburn put up that kind of fight against LSU. And LSU's got some problems on offense. They've got a real tough power running game. They got a stable of backs, but Zach Mettenberger hasn't quite turned out to be the quarterback that they expected him to be. G-Man, anything stick out in the SEC schedule this past weekend to you?
Well, one thing you didn't mention was the continuing dumpster fire that is the Arkansas football program.
Right.
Losing to Rutgers. And granted, Rutgers, I think they're undefeated, but Rutgers, Arkansas, I mean, what has happened? Just
in your house, too. They lost at Arkansas.
The league, all the preseason polls and talk and what they did last year, and I just can't believe what's happened to those guys. And in Florida, I think you have to take note of what they're doing.
Right.
I think they had the athletes in the past couple of years. They just couldn't put it together. Didn't have a quarterback. And I think they've sort of replaced Arkansas on our schedule as the team that we should be most concerned about as far as being able to win, have a spectacular season. LSU, they're just going to be really tough to beat in their place. And unfortunately, I think by then they may get their act together and be better on offense than they are now. I hope not. But Arkansas is still a big head scratcher for me.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, we could still easily have three losses on this schedule, but I don't know. You just feel a little better about LSU. You certainly feel better about Arkansas. Georgia looks tough. I mean, Georgia played really well and just hammered a Vandy team that we struggled with. But that is going to be a wild scene. If South Carolina and Georgia can both win this weekend, that is going to be crazy. Top 10 matchup. We had another top 10 matchup down in Tallahassee, which leads us into
This week in Dabo.
So Clemson went down to Tallahassee and gave up a whopping 667 yards of total offense to Florida State. And I think Dabo said today, or maybe it was yesterday, he said, if you're going to get Clemson, you better get us this year. Is that some sort of concession, T-Bone?
No, that's just what he says every year after the first loss. I mean, every year that he's been the head coach, they talk about that. The fan base up here went from a very quiet Sunday to a complete delusional Monday. A lot of talk. I even saw a couple of articles written by apparently people who are paid to write that talked about how Saturday was really a good thing. It was a good thing. It was a good thing because that is the best defense that Clemson will face all year. The article I read said, including the mighty Gamecocks triple exclamation point.
So somebody who gets paid to write.
Defense they will face all year, and they were still able to hang 400 yards of offense on the best defense they'll face all year. So the thought process seems to be all is good, all is well. They won't face another juggernaut like Florida State, and they should sweep their way on through the conference.
Hey, you know, thank goodness for that shaking the Southland guy. Because
yeah, I know.
Everybody else up there is drinking the Kool-Aid. It's like a cult. I know we said this before, but I mean, what are they doing to the people up there? You know, you get shellacked by Florida State. They had more yards by like 100 than West Virginia did against them. The only reason they didn't score more is because they fumbled twice inside the 20.
Okay? Right.
And they took a knee on the 10-yard line at the end of the game.
Right, okay? Right.
And yet, I'm with you. I was going to say the same thing. They almost act like it was the better to lose than to win.
Right.
Like it was what they wanted to happen was to lose. But I encourage all of our listeners who want a good laugh, and I wish I could quote some of it, but this is a family show, but go read that Shake in the Southland blog post. That was one of the most entertaining reads I've ever had as a Gamecock fan, reading something from the Clemson perspective.
Yeah, that guy was just – he was just hammering the coaching staff and the players. And I tell you what, they can be all, you know, sunshine and puppy dog tails they want to. You don't fix a 70 – you know, giving up 70 points or 670 yards in a season or two. That's an overhaul. You know, I mean, here you brought in the savior Brent Venables to retool your defense. You could stop somebody from getting 600 yards with a high school defense. I mean, what was going on out there?
Well, that's the old saying. It's not the X's and the O's. It's the Jimmies and the Joes. There's not a lot of talent on the defensive side of that ball. You know, that just I heard one of the radio commentators up here say, just tell me right now on the Clemson defense who's going to lead us in sacks, who's going to lead us in interceptions.
Right.
He said, if you paused for more than a couple of seconds, then there's your problem.
Because I can't even name one of their defensive linemen. I mean,
no, it's a bunch of no-name guys. They don't recruit defensive linemen. They don't recruit offensive linemen. They're one, and I'm not wishing this on them because I want to beat them straight up, but they're one offensive line injury away from losing four games this year. I mean, they are thin on both lines.
They got one committed for next year. What are you talking about?
There you go.
He's a two-star recruit out of Batesburg.
You know, they were talking just this week here on local radio, and it's taken as a given. It is taken as the, you know, veritas truth that they have the best skill players in the country. They say that like a mantra. Well, you know, we've got the best skill players in the country, so ...
Right.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know what
you know, Watkins, I'll give you. Hopkins, I'll give you. And I'll even reluctantly tell you that Taj Boyd is a pretty good quarterback under the right circumstances, unless you hit him in the mouth a couple of times and he wets his pants. But you just can't – either a Florida State coach or a player said today, look at where they got all their yardage. They got 300 yards on trick plays and, you know, basically nothing running their base offense, which, if I can get 300 yards on trick plays, I'll take it. But still, I think the point is they're not going to smash you in the mouth. They're not going to come right at you and they can't beat you just with their talent alone. They've got to kind of mix it up and try to, you know, little smoke and mirrors. But
you know what else I think, and I was thinking about this today. I think that their defense suffers because of their offense a little bit.
Yeah,
and I don't think they have a lot of talent on that side of the ball either. But I think that fast break offense they run, it can't be good for your defense. I mean, first of all, you don't see any traditional offensive teams or plays in practice. And you also have the, you know, either you're punting after three plays or they score a touchdown and you're right back on the field. I just, right. I don't know if that's a good mixture. What do you guys think about that?
That's been one of the complaints on the offense that, you know, Oregon runs, that Malzahn runs, you know, the architect of all this stuff. And, you get down the field and you score in 2 minutes and you put your defense right back out there. It can be a problem if you don't have a lot of depth on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, right now for Clemson, it looks like it could be a problem. So that's enough of talking about those jokers. Let's get back to the South Carolina side of things. And right before we taped this, I sent out a tweet and I said, we're getting ready to tape the show. Send any questions and we'll get them on the show. And I immediately got a question from Connor Tapp at the Half Cocked Show, who says, how much of a bag on a scale of one to bag is Ron Morris? So
family show.
It is a family show. I'm going to see if I can find a bleep out there. But T-Bone, I'll let you take that one.
You're going to let me take that one. I don't even know what to say about the actual subject. You know, if you can go from zero to bag, how quickly can you get there? I don't know. I just know that I've got the feeling with what happened today with the press conference, what's happened the last couple of days when Spurrier's been in front of the media, and even the kind of hint he made last week. The SID whispered something to him as the press conference was ending, and he said, no, we're not going to talk about that today. I've got the feeling that we may have a slightly different approach with Ray Tanner than we had with the Tar Heel guy. That right. did great things here, but I never liked. I can't think of his name. I think Ray may get it when it comes to Mr. Morris. And so he was not at the press conference today. I don't know if he was not invited or if he forgot about it or if he was, you know, off somewhere sharpening his that axe that he grinds all the time. But he was not there today, and I'm curious to see if that continues. Maybe it will.
So another question along the same lines from the Twitter feed, Anthony Goodrow, who is a loyal follower of TRC, says, any truth to the rumor that Ron Morris was molested as a child by a chicken?
By a chicken. Yeah.
So I get the feeling our fans don't really care so much for one Ronald Morris.
Let me just say, we need to put the jokes to the side and address this question. There is no truth to the rumor that Ron Morris was molested as a child by a chicken. That happened 3 days ago. And but as I understand, it's been happening repeatedly.
It's a serial chicken rapist.
It's a problem.
So, all right. Well, Ron Moore, do you get the sense, though, G-Man, that Spurrier kind of enjoys this a little bit?
Well, sure. Spurrier loves needling the media and, you know, bantering back and forth or in this case, you know, not taking questions. I mean, it's always, you know, Spurrier's always been that kind of a coach, you know, who this is sports. This is football. We're not talking, you know, Middle East policy here. Okay. I mean, let's all put it in perspective. I mean, this is entertainment for all of us. And I think the HBC, gets that a little bit, but I think he's a little miffed that, I mean, what has happened and all, when you boil it down is Morris has for the second time now questioned Spurrier's integrity. I mean, he basically calls it into question, you know, says that he did it in the Bruce Ellington situation and he's done it again here in the Connor Shaw situation. And I think it's fair to, be a critical journalist and research your stories and come up with meaningful pieces. But, you know, frankly, he's just coming out and calling Spurrier sort of a liar and a scumbag and somebody who lacks morals. And you know, I just think that that's cowardly journalism. I mean, you know, where's the research? Where's the work? Where's the hard work that needs to be put in before you make that type of statement?
Well, and that's the bigger question here. I mean, let's get away from the joking about Mr. Morris and whatever his issues are. You know, it's just the laziness of it. And he's just the biggest symptom of the disease that seems to be in a lot of our sports media in Columbia. I mean, if you use the word lazy, and I think that's exactly right. You know, the easiest thing in the world is to drive down there after practice, stick a microphone in one of the coach's face and say, hey, I saw so-and-so in a yellow jersey. You know, and that's a lot of what we get is just that kind of thing. You know, these guys that are our beat writers, shouldn't we know more about the backgrounds of these kids? You know, I mean, shouldn't they spend some time researching like the stories? You know, I find out more from Vern freaking Lundquist about our players than I find out from my beat writers. And right. I don't know if any of them are will end up listening to this. I doubt it, but. But that's one area, as annoying as he is, and if he were listening, he would not take offense that I find him annoying. Phil Kornblut works pretty hard, and I don't always agree with what he says, but that guy works pretty hard at this job. But you got, what's his name, the whiny guy at the state.
Oh, Josh.
Josh.
Josh at the state.
Oh, jeez, Josh, please. You know, he rolls out there, and he's got a roster, and he says, hey, look, 74 is wearing yellow. And that's it. He's done. You know, that's as deep as he's going to go.
Right,
so
right.
They all need to pick their game up and do a little work.
Well, you know, another thing that Morris said today, and I almost forgot about this, in an interview, he said that what Spurrier is doing is how the Penn State situation got started.
Oh, jeez.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Is that not – I mean, that is just over the top.
Well, you know, he's going to find himself banned from every press conference from now. I mean, that is ridiculous. I mean, even if he's trying to make some sort of subtle point or whatever, he's got to know how radioactive that type of comment would be in this climate. I mean, just unbelievable that he would stoop that low. And, you know, he better watch out around Columbia, because I'm sure there's a lot of people already saying, you know, we're going to cancel our subscription to the state. We're going to stop reading it. We're going to stop doing this. I mean, I can see people. I mean, the state's already struggling. I mean, maybe they think this is a good thing for their paper. I don't know. But it's just not well thought of.
Not well thought out. It's also not factually correct. I mean, he was trying to make some point that, you know, people didn't ask Joe Paterno questions. Who was going to ask Joe Paterno about this? You know, go 5 years ago. Do you have a child molester on your staff? I mean, is that what Ron Morris thinks we should be doing? Is asking questions like that? It just doesn't factually make sense. But that's just the way he likes to get the ugliest piece of dirt he can, throw it as hard as he can against the wall, and hope it sticks. That's what he calls journalism.
Well, I think he's just upset that Lou Holtz isn't here, because he hated Lou so much. Now he's transferred that anger to Spurrier. You know, it says whoever's here, he's just going to become the thorn in the side of whoever the coach is. Now, anyway, he does write an occasional good piece and a positive piece on the Gamecocks, but he can't stand, you know, prosperity. He's got to come up and do something like this Joe Paterno comment, or, you know, question the coach's integrity, which, you know, say all you want about Spurrier, you know, he does love the needle and all this sort of stuff, but there are not many people in the college game across the country who are going to question Steve Spurrier's integrity. I mean, you have people pick on him and make fun of him for his sayings and his way and all this stuff, but, you know, you don't have people out there saying that he's a cheat or a fraud or something like that. I mean, that's just or lacking morals or lacking integrity. That's just not said, and I don't think it's believed by just about anybody in the college football or the college football world.
Well, because so many people think that he's an a-hole, if he did lack integrity, he wouldn't be in this business anymore. Something would have happened to him by now, but somebody would have uncovered something or, you know, been out to get him. But and I always tell people that, you know, oh, I hate that Spurrier and blah blah blah. And that's fine. Hate Spurrier because he's an a-hole or because of something he said about your team that's true that just stabbed you in the heart. But yeah, the integrity part of it, you know, is unquestioned with Steve Spurrier. So you know, when you mentioned Kornblut, and there's this funny little dance that goes on with the media because they have to come back and defend Morris because they're defending themselves as the media. And you know, we love Kornblut and K-Mac and how they banter with everybody, but they kind of have to circle up and say, oh well, what Spurrier's doing here is wrong, and then they just, you know, get back to their jobs sticking microphones in his face. So let's move on from that, and we're going to do a quick little hoops segment here. G-Man, tell us about this new recruit that we picked up today.
I can't tell you much.
I can tell you that he picked us over Mercer.
6'9 guy somewhere in Georgia, I believe.
Yeah.
First commit for the 2013 class for Frank Martin. I'm just glad we got a big body coming in. They say he's a low post banger type, who's going to be a good defender, a good rebounder, needs work on his offensive game. But you know, it's kind of hard to coach big-bodied 6'9". I mean, you know, that's you need some of those guys in your program, and we've obviously been lacking a little bit in the you know, the old aircraft carrier type of body down low in the last few years. So I'm all for it to get a big guy in here like that. Now, the other recent news on the hoops front is that Thornwell, I think it's Sedarius Thornwell, the kid out of I think Lancaster is where he's from, has narrowed his choices to us and NC State. And you say, why NC State? But I think Gottfried is doing a pretty good job up there recruiting. And
yeah,
this is a must get for the program. This is the best player in the state, even though he's at Oak Hill right now for his senior year. It's the best player in the state. We've got to get him. And let's hope that that Martin can reel him in. So everybody keep your fingers crossed.
What do you think the odds are? You think we got a good shot?
You know, it's hard to say. It's very hard to say. I don't like it when they narrow it down to two like that, you know, and kind of keep the in-state school in there. Sometimes it makes you wonder if they're just letting you hang around. You know, NC State being in the ACC is a big draw. Gottfried is a good coach and a good recruiter. I mean, I've always had a lot of respect for him. And I think that we got a good shot, but, I mean, they say he's got a good relationship with Ellington, which I'm hoping is going to carry the day. And, you know, Bruce being a pretty prominent guy in our sports program. But I don't know. I'm going to flip a coin, say 50-50.
Well, now, another thing that I saw today, and, you know, when Desmond Ringer committed, you know, our Twitter feed just blows up with 100 people saying Desmond Ringer committed, Desmond Ringer committed. I saw a couple of quick tweets about Thaddeus Hall possibly making the grade and getting into school. Did you see that today?
I did not. I didn't get on Twitter today, so I did not notice that. But I've heard nothing. I hadn't heard his name mentioned in you know, local media in you know, a couple of months. I don't know how he could get in school now. Anyway, it's too late.
I don't know. You know, maybe he starts the winter session or something. I don't know. But it was. There were a couple of tweets like midday, and then I haven't seen anything else about it. So I'll do a little.
Well, I'd love to see it. He's got offense, and we need offense. But I've never heard, you know, positive things about his academic situation. But, you know, again, we're the outsiders. We're not the insiders. So I really have nothing more to offer other than what I've heard on the radio and read on message boards. So anyway.
What are we paying you for? Get on the street. Get out there. Well, T-Bone, the women's basketball TV schedule came out today. You know, which one of those games are you circling on your calendar, and are you going to watch with the family?
I'll say this, that, you know, you might as well bring that up to me when it comes to the basketball program. I can't. I'll quote the woman from Dances with Wolves. I can't make the talk. I'm not going to be able to help you here. All I'll say is, wake me up when we offer a basketball scholarship to Brandon Langley.
Right. Yeah. Looks like Brandon Langley may be switching a commitment to Georgia here before too long. But hopefully we'll hang on to him. We'll see. All right, guys. Well, we got a big game against Kentucky coming up on Saturday, and then a humongous game coming up on October 6th against Georgia. So any final words for the fans?
Free DJ, baby. Free DJ.
Free DJ.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the Kentucky receivers and running backs this week.
Yeah, let's just hope DJ doesn't get suspended again for the Georgia game.
Yeah, good point. I think
just needs to knock their helmets off this time.
Right. All right, Gamecock Nation, before we sign off, we'd like to remind all you Gamecock fans it has now been 1,401 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football. I am Buck for the RubberChickensBlog.com, and we will talk to you soon.